When he was running for president, Donald Trump promised that he would go to Washington and, right, drain the swamp. He's directly done that in many ways through executive orders. And recently, he appears to have done that either incidentally or intentionally by compelling two members of the GOP establishment to walk away rather than fight him. He had reviewed this past week's dust-up within the Republican Party of St. Peter's University political science professor, Alan Sanders. Thanks for being here today, Professor.
Hello. How are you, Chris?
Very good to have you here. stpeters.edu. Learn more about the education opportunity St. Peter's University offers you if you are looking for either new opportunities or changing the ones that you have. So I'm watching C-SPAN. I'm one of the few that do these days, I guess. But I'm watching Senator Flake give this speech. And, you know, for the casual observer, there's someone standing up to fight. He's bravely speaking out on principle. When the truth is, isn't it, Professor, he was really unlikely to win re-election if he did go for it?
Well, that's right. There are two things going on here. Sure, he was not headed towards re-election. That's pretty clear. But, you know, when you don't have to rely on the voters anymore, sometimes you speak more from the heart. And I think that's what Senator Flake was doing. He was speaking from the heart. He's been on the record for a long time opposing Donald Trump, even during the election. And he was sounding a warning shot to Republicans that although Donald Trump may be appealing to the base, there is another segment of the Republican Party that does not is not comfortable with Donald Trump. Now, how powerful that other branch of the Republican Party may be, we need to wait and see. But nonetheless, it was a call from that wing indicating dissatisfaction with the conduct of the presidency.
And, you know, I always keep hearing about the base being small and the establishment being the force. And I always think back, there's an old axiom in radio, and I guess it applies now to emails and things like that, that basically, it'll fluctuate 1 or 2 percentage points, but basically 10% of people watching or listening to something or knowing something is going on will make an effort to go to it or to react to it. You know, for every one email the radio station gets in New York City, it represents maybe 100,000 people, for example. But so if you take that concept of 10% make the effort and you look at the size of the crowds that the president gets when he goes out, makes me think that that base might be a lot larger than the polls are reflecting it actually being.
Well, yeah, that may be. But remember, and I think you well know this too, right? Elections in the United States are decided by their marginal victories. It's a rare day that somebody wins an overwhelming victory. That does happen on occasion, but most victories are marginal. So whether the base is large or small, or whether the establishment wing is large or small, if you alienate a part of the party, you do run the risk of losing marginally. And that's the basic concern. Remember, there used to be a time when the GOP used to call itself the Big Ten Party,
right,
on the theory that you have to add marginally as many people as possible. The strategy seems to have been torpedoed and thrown out the window. Certainly Donald Trump makes very little effort to appeal to a broader segment. Now, how broad the base is, yes, you and I can debate that. I don't think we really know for sure. But the traditional strategy is you don't cut people off. You try to add marginally as many people as you can. That's the traditional route to victory in elections in the United States.
Well, like I alluded to in the introduction, what Trump has done, I mean, he picks his enemies, not always responding, but then when he does respond, he does it rather strongly, I guess we could say. And when you look at the people that he's taking runs at, is this another way, again, intentionally, unintentionally, of him draining the swamp, where he's pushing McCain off to the side, pushing Flake out of the spotlight, pushing Corker not to come back? Anyone who the president sees as not being able to step up and change the system to make things work, he's just going to try to shove or shame out of the way.
Well, you know, it depends how you define the swamp. I mean, supporters of Donald Trump may think Flake is part of the swamp. Supporters of Senator Flake may think that Trump is part of the swamp. What you're really talking about is you're using loose language in order to frame your opponents negatively. Certainly Donald Trump knows how to do that. He's been a master at framing or creating frames for his opponents. And he uses very vengeful and very tough and very rough and sometimes vulgar or outrageous statements. And therefore, it should not be surprising. It should not be surprising that if you're attacking your opponents in that way, that those opponents then strike back in using very similar language. I mean, when you look at Senator Corker and his language of adult care, pertaining to Donald Trump, that's really a response to the level of rhetoric that Trump himself has been using. So unfortunately, what has happened is the language of politics has gotten coarser, has gotten in many ways much more vulgar and outrageous. And unfortunately, many people think that's normal, but it really isn't. Our debates in the past have been strong, but not through the use of such strong language.
Would all of this that we saw this past week, really the past couple of weeks, have been avoided if that one night when John McCain was the last vote for health care reform and repealing Obamacare, that the thumb went up instead of down?
Well, certainly, that has framed the political situation right now for Republicans. In terms of legislative victories on major bills, the results have been meager. And so what you're seeing is now a major push on tax reform, because that was another major promise of the Republican Party and of Donald Trump. That the fact that Obamacare repeal failed has tended to unify Republicans now and sort of glued them much more than they used to be, because they realized that they have to produce something that is big, and tax reform would be big. And so many Republicans who might have been willing to more publicly support Corker or Flake are now saying, no, the more important aspect for us for re-election, the midterm elections, is to actually stick together and produce something big like tax reform.
So Professor Alan Sanders, who is St. Peter's University political science professor, stpeters.edu is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. In his speech, did Flake make a mistake by using the term mad, as into alluding to the fact that there are voters out there who are mad, and he have to run a mad campaign because the people more so are angry. They feel ignored. They want the representatives to be passionate about what they see as priority issues, like tax reform, like health care reform, like jobs, like education. And it's almost sounded, at least to my ears, that Flake was using mad in more of a negative term.
Well, certainly, I'm sure he was in that sense. Of course, you can be mad in a negative sense. You can be mad in just the sense that you're angry. There's no question that Donald Trump has, resonated with people who are very much angry with the way things are going. And that was the key to his victory in several key states. People who feel that they've been passed over, that their voices haven't been heard, that their jobs are disappearing, and that whatever new jobs are being created really don't provide them with the income that they used to have from their old jobs. So there's no question that there's great dissatisfaction. The real issue, and of course we'll only know this as time goes on, is whether the solutions that are being proposed by Donald Trump will actually solve the problems that triggered that anger. The Democrats, of course, are arguing that the Trump policies will not solve the problems and that, in fact, some of them will be made worse. The Trump advocates are suggesting that that's not true, that, in fact, Trump policy will solve the problems. We will only know that over time, but there's no question that both parties know that there's great anger out there. There was great anger that Donald Trump saw and, used to win his victory. The same can be said on the left. Bernie Sanders was also the voice of the angry and the powerless, but coming from the left. So there's no question there's great anger, and there's anger both on the left and on the right, and the solutions are being proposed by both the left and the right, but we have to see which ones will be more successful.
And the difference between in the 2016 election on the two sides were the angry Bernie supporters stayed home.
To
a large number, not in entirety, obviously,
but if
as many who were there for Bernie stayed there for Hillary, we would have had a whole different story that night.
Well, that's right. I mean, certainly there might be some of them. I mean, it goes back to what I said to you, right? It depends on marginal victories. Everything is marginal or nearly everything is marginal in U.S. elections. So if you get a disaffected group, sure, some of them will swallow hard and vote for the candidate that they think is closer to their opinions. Some will stay home. That also remains to be seen in the midterm elections. What will the base feel like with Donald Trump? What will the disaffected Republicans feel like when it comes to the midterm elections? That's why I'm suggesting to you there are many cross currents here that are at play. It's a little too early to really think definitively as to what will happen in the midterm. There's cause for optimism in both parties. There's cause for apprehension in both parties. Much of that will determine on how successful the midterm elections, much of it will depend on how successful the Republican majorities are in actually producing and passing legislation according to their agenda.
I know this is the outside chance type of idea, but it is being talked about that there'll be a split off and technically a third party, presumably a GOP-leaning third party, which some people are saying would be a red carpet to huge wins for the Democrats. But then others would say, well, wouldn't that create problems for both the Democrats and GOP because it would possibly potentially siphon from both sides into that third part of the triangle then?
Well, sure. But, you know, the parties have been strong. That is to say, they've been very resilient, and they've been able to stay put together at least for purposes of organizing the Congress. What does often happen in American history is that there's a third party, or let's put it this way, there's a wing of one or the other party that votes apart from the main wing of the party when it comes to actual policy. So, for instance, on the Democratic side, you used to have what were called Blue Dog Democrats or Southern Democrats, which tended to vote more conservatively than the mainstream Democratic Party. But they still voted, although they might have differed on policy, they still voted to organize the Congress along party lines. So I'm not sure third party is quite the right word for it, but you might have factional splits that result in obstacles to various policies being passed by the majority wing of whichever party controls the Congress.
He is a political science professor at St. Peter's University. stpeters.edu is their website. Professor Alan Sanders, thanks for being here today.
It's always a pleasure, Chris. Take care.